I think they like you, Steve.
Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Good morning, Chicago. 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show here. Dustin Kaufman in for Steve till Tuesday, but everybody else is here. Sam Bird, Dave Bennett, Steve Rizanich, Mary Vandeville. We got a great show lined up this morning. It's an unbelievable show. I always enjoy the show, obviously. It's so much fun to be on the show. And it's these kind of shows that come together when you have Chuck Todd. You have gold medal winners. Kendall Coyne is going to be with us. You have legendary television creators. Phil Rosenthal, the man behind Everybody Loves Raymond and the new show. What is it?
Somebody Feed Phil.
Somebody Feed Phil, which I watched a couple episodes last night.
We watched that show, so
there you
I've
go.
Got your back on
there,
that
good,
one.
Good, good, good. Yeah. I watched the Dublin episode. I watched the New York episode, a little bit of the Thailand episode. So I'm up to speed. I know where he's been. Also, Jim DeRogatis, I think, will be our first guest on the Cochran Show that has been called out in an R. Kelly song, right? There's not too many people in an R. Kelly song by name that have been called out. Jim DeRogatis in the 19-minute I Admit track that was dropped by R. Kelly on Monday, he referenced Jim DeRogatis in the song.
Wasn't Orion also?
Orion, too. I think it's Orion, and then it's Jim DeRogatis. I think that's, I think in that order, in that particular order, is how it worked. But
with a Lyle Dean appearance.
Yeah, Lyle Dean's, I know, Max Armstrong. There's a lot of, the farming team here at GN has already been referenced by R. Kelly, but now Jim DeRogatis. So we'll have Jim will join us later in the program. So, yeah, and Bridget Gaynor's going to be here this morning, along with Pat Brady. We've got a great MVPP, most valuable person on the planet. We've got great shows.
Right, and people can talk about their junk with swap meet.
That's right. They can talk about their junk, get their junk evaluated with swap meets. Greg Flam will be here. He's got a great show. I'm so excited. So why don't we get it started with Top 6 to 6?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the Top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, let's get it started. Top 6 at 6 this morning. I gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. President Trump and EU officials agreed in principle to the easing of escalating tariff rhetoric. The president will peel back on promises to jack up tariffs on automobiles and other European products. And in turn, the EU will buy a ton of soybeans. Win-win for everybody, right? I mean, it's a win-win. Well, until the next 6 a.m. tweet blows it all up. But depending on who you read, this is either a big win for Trump's hardball tactics or a huge blink. I saw that blink
a
lot this morning. I don't know. Can it be both? I think this is a perfect way for the country to come together and compromise. We can sell soybeans and we can have something in our eye. Right.
I grew up in a house for a couple of years that was right behind us was giant fields of soybeans. And when everyone when it asked us, well, what is that field? And it was depressing to say soybeans because as a kid, nobody eats a soybean, know, it's when like corn or something really cool.
Yeah. So I think Fruit Loops.
Little did I know that I would end up soybeans would be such a big deal in life. You know,
you've read six different articles about soybeans in the last 24 hours.
Allegheny Road and Gray's Lake, you know, soybean field.
And I drink big O will say it's not soy milk.
Oh, that's
because you don't get milk from a soybean. However, there is a product known as soy milk.
Then you got to be feeling good this morning.
Yeah.
Soy juice.
Yeah, soy juice.
It's like almond milk. It's not really almonds.
Right. That's right. Trump has suddenly fallen in love with soybeans before his scheduled trip to talk farming in the Midwest today. First, he'll talk blast furnaces in Granite City before heading to Dubuque. He will no doubt be talking up his deal with the EU, but he also talking about his controversial farming bailout. You know, the one where he gives money to farmers because of those natural disasters. I mean, his own trade policy. Trump's playing a soybean shell game, if you will. China says no more soybeans, so he gets Brussels to double down, but then we all have to buy Volkswagen Jettas for the rest of our life.
And hopefully they won't lie about our emissions tests on those Volkswagens.
You know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I made a great deal behind closed doors.
We're going to pretend they passed.
You're all Volkswagen. You're all going to get one. That's what you get for the rest of your life. Thank me later.
As long as it comes with that cool switchblade key.
Yeah, right.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah. All right. Select conservative Republicans in the House have drawn up articles of impeachment for Department of Justice Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. He oversees Robert Mueller's investigation into the Trump campaign over dealings with Russia. They're specifically citing the fact that Rosenstein won't give them more DOJ documents that they've requested. Gee, I wonder why. Because every time Rosenstein shares any info with Congress, they run like hell to the White House or to the press. It's ridiculous. I mean, they already have their memos written. They're ready to put... There was so much success and crazy interest in the memos, Devin Nunes' memo and the Democrat response, that you know every single member of Congress right now is like, I want to do a memo. Can I do a memo? I really want to do a memo.
There's no chance in heck this is going to go anywhere. This is just grandstanding by these really conservative Republicans. The full House is not going to take this up, and there's no way this is ever going to get to the Senate. So you have to ask yourself, why are they doing this?
Yeah, so we talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. And here we are. It's the third. It made it to the third item on Top 6 at 6. They're doing their job. They're doing their job. Locally, Alderman Ed Burke has called for every investigative body that is able to look into mayoral candidate Willie Wilson's cash handout from this past weekend at a Southside church. He even wants the feds involved. Wilson handed out $40,000 in cash to parishioners after a service that included Governor Rauner. Wilson said it was his own money, and the state election board said he didn't break any rules, but that hasn't stopped everybody from recognizing how shady it looks to hand out cash to would-be voters.
Once this is made into a movie, this whole race in general, that'll be my favorite part, I think. The guy that plays Willie Wilson handing out cash.
Who plays Willie Wilson? That's Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. That'd be good. You know.
In a related story, I've switched churches.
Right? But I love how the number's been changed, too. Yeah. When Steve and I were talking about it, we were all talking about it earlier, it was $300,000. And then we were trying to figure out, like, that's a ton of money to hand out in one 30-minute session for parishioners coming out. How many people are at that church? And now the number has been, we've rounded down. It's now, the Wilson camp says $40,000.
I wonder if Willie went to the bank himself. Or one of his people went to take the cash out, you know, because he can't get that at the ATM.
I implore everyone to go find the video of him handing out the cash, because it is so stark with him. The stack, it's almost like a cartoon.
Yeah.
I've never seen a stack of cash like that, like a huge brick of cash that he's just, every bill off the top, he's just like handing up $100 bills, 50, whatever, I don't know what the denomination was, but it was amazing to see a human being actually have a stack of cash in his hand like that, handing it to somebody else. It was like right out of a cartoon.
If you're the parishioner who was off that weekend, like you're on your summer vacation or something, and you hear the one time you didn't go, you missed out on a cash handout.
Or you just were lazy, and you're like, I'll go to church next
week.
Right.
How many ATMs do you have to hit to get to 40 G's?
There isn't. I can't go to my bank and pull out 40 G's.
No, I don't have 40
cash.
G's to take out.
Yeah, right.
So.
But I couldn't go in. I feel like for $200, they're checking my credit score. To pull out my own money. So, All right. So the mayor said he's still not sure if he's going to endorse a planned protest to block Lakeshore Drive and disrupt a Cubs game coming up next week. You know you're doing it wrong when the mayor is mulling whether or not to support you as a protester. This is Chicago. The mayor needs to be calling in the National Guard, not marching alongside. I cannot believe that the mayor said yesterday he still doesn't know. How he'll respond is whether or not he supports the march. Where are we? Protests are not supposed to include the officials that you're protesting.
Right, right.
Am I wrong in that? I'm amazed that the mayor... I would think the mayor would say no comment, or the mayor would say, don't mess up... I'm just surprised that he thinks that it's okay to not because I feel that he can't say that, but just this idea that the protests are about. I mean, we had the Reverend on this week. He slammed into Mayor Emanuel.
Yeah, he said
five times
we don't want him in the position. But and I think one of you pointed out that it's very difficult to even disrupt a Cub game anyway, because it's already chaos around there every Cub game. If the protesters could organize rain,
right.
Rain would disrupt. That would disrupt.
Right.
Probably not walking down the street, but...
The cubby bear disrupts.
Yeah.
Right? A protest would be fine. Speaking of the National Guard, the 50th anniversary of the 68th Democrat National Convention is next month, and protests are planned to commemorate the festivities, almost like a reenactment protest. Which is great. Can I play Abby Hoffman? I would love to play. I could get the.
I don't think no. Yeah, you'd need some
glasses.
Yeah, you'd need some extra accoutrements, mainly the hair.
I want to play. I love it. I'm going to show up like in hippie clothes and be like, "I'm sorry, I thought this was a reenactment. I didn't know we were actually protesting today."
Our boss Stephanie could hook you up with hair and a costume.
Good. I'm going to need it. Yeah. I think that would be a great bit to walk down there like you were, like you thought it was a reenactment.
Were you even alive in 68?
I was not. No.
See, I mean, I have very vivid memories of that convention. Oh. And I mean, it was a dark moment for the city and for the nation.
Well,
but that was such a.
We're gonna have a month to talk about it next month. So let's do an hour with Dave on protest. Were you down there? Do you have the bell bottoms on? Or
No. I wasn't that old.
He was still head to toe.
I might have had the bell bottoms on, but I wasn't there.
All right, and the last one, still no Roquan. The Bears' first-round pick is a no-show at camp. Now, most teams haven't started camp yet, Dave, so the Bears are early because they're playing in the Hall of Fame game. So it technically, I guess, and I've heard this excuse that, well, it's not a thing until actually the official camps start next week.
Well, I think that's part of it. I also think that these things do happen. I don't think this is a situation where the two sides are digging their heels into the ground saying, we're not going to budge. I think this is just one of those detail things that they're going to get worked out and he's going to be there. And I think that a couple of months from now, you're going to look back at this and say, really wasn't that big a deal. Look, there's two first rounders who aren't signed. The other one's Sam Darnold, the quarterback, who I think is going to, they say he's going to be ready to go in the first practice on Friday. But at this point, it's not. You know, would you like to have him there? Absolutely.
Let me throw some names at you. Some recent holdouts in Bears history. I saw this. Curtis Enos.
Yeah.
Cedric Benson. And Cade McNown. Not great names in Chicago Bears history.
No, for different reasons. Yeah. But I also think those were situations where the two sides were digging their heels in. I think it's more a detail thing. I think they will get it figured out.
If you're Roquan Smith, you want to be associated with those three names in Bears history.
Well, just remember Joey Bosa a couple years ago didn't sign till the last few days of August, ended up the defensive rookie of the year. Yeah, so there is precedent.
All right, that's your top six at six.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, coming up, Nick DiGilio is going to join us, and of course, we are going to have Chuck Todd back on the program. It's been like a month.
He is Nick at night, DiGilio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Nick DiGilio.
I need to know what Nick is thinking.
720 WGN. Nick is on the line as he is every Thursday morning. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
All right. So what did you and your parents see this past week? And I'm intrigued by this.
We saw Denzel Washington beat the crap out of people for 2 hours.
How was it?
I liked it. The last 20 minutes is ridiculous. they throw in a hurricane at the end and guys trying to snipe him and kill him. But every scene where Denzel just like breaks some guy's arms or punches him in the face or pokes their eyes out, that's gold.
It's so gold. It was funny because it was my son's birthday, and on Sunday we were picking a movie because it was raining. And I was trying to convince him towards Ant-Man in other ways, but I also knew it was his birthday, and my wife was kind of pushing him towards Transylvania 3. And that's what we ended up on. I had to be cool because it was his birthday, but that was terrible. It was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's not. I mean, you know, those movies are. Adam Sandler. Yeah. What are we talking about here?
What are we talking about? What we should be talking about this weekend is the big weekend for Mission Impossible fans. The franchise is back, and from the little that I've read about it, it seems like it's rebooted and it's in the right direction.
Well, I don't think there's ever been a bad Mission Impossible movie, quite frankly. I think they're all great. And it's one of those weird things where each movie gets better. And everything I've heard about this one, I'm seeing it. My folks and I are seeing it in IMAX on Saturday. Everything I've heard about this movie is incredible. People are saying it's like the best action movie in a really long time. In fact, one critic said it's the best action movie since Mad Max Fury Road. And in my world, that's sacrilege, because Mad Max Fury Road is one of the greatest movies ever made.
You've watched that one about 100 times, right, Nick?
Well past 100. Well past 100. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. So if people are comparing it to that, then it's got to be good.
Yeah.
You know it's good when you've broken your ankle while making it, I think.
Yeah.
I think that sets the bar.
Well, I mean, Tom Cruise is a maniac. He insists on doing his own stunts. I mean, he produces these movies, so he's got a say in whether or not he can do some of these stunts. But and the guy is going to be 57, and he's jumping out of planes, and that's really him doing all this stuff. And he busted his ankle jumping from one building to another, trying to catch onto a roof. And the actual shot of him snapping his ankle, it's in the movie. Yes. Like the actual take of him snapping his ankle off is in the movie, and he continued to climb over the wall and run out of the take.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, with a busted ankle.
Are you Tom Cruise guy? I mean, for all, not just Mission Impossible, you like him in other ways?
I love Tom Cruise. And I know that, like, he, you know, like a lot of people have issues with him in his personal life. He's a Scientologist.
Does he have a girlfriend now?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Mayor must know.
You know what? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think he ever has.
That's good by me. Stick to doing action films.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I couldn't care less if he's a Scientologist. And, you know, like, everybody went off on him because he was jumping up and down on the couch on Oprah's show screaming about Katie Holmes. But you know what? On the Oprah show, that's normal behavior. If you watch any Oprah episode, people act like morons. If you look at the crowd at an Oprah show, they're all jumping up and down like lunatics. So Tom Cruise acting that way on an Oprah show, that's normal.
Maybe he just won a car. Maybe she just gifted a car and they just edited that part out, right?
But the thing I find really interesting is that I think this movie's going to make a lot of money because all the Mission Impossible movies are successful, and yet nobody goes and sees anything else that he's in.
Yeah.
Like American Made came out last year, which was a terrific movie, and nobody saw it. The Mummy was a huge bomb. It sucked, but it was a huge bomb. Edge of Tomorrow, no one saw. Great movie.
Great
Oblivion,
movie.
No one went to. Jack Reacher, both sequels, not good, and nobody went to it. So the only movies that people now currently see are the Mission Impossible movies.
Well,
so, I mean, I just, you know.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, this will be the weekend for that. If you want to see Nick will be his film club screening of I Want to Hold Your Hand on August 7th. He'll be at the AMC Rosemont 18 as part of Zemeckis Fest. This is a must-see for anybody who's a fan of Zemeckis. So I Want to Hold Your Hand, August 7th at the AMC Rosemont 18. And, of course, you can hear Nick every weekday. I think there's a Friday or Monday. I forget which one that you're not on, but 1 to 5. And, of course, every Thursday here on the Steve Cochran Show. Nick, thanks for joining us, bud.
All right, buddy. Take care.
There you go. That's awesome, man. I love it. I love when he gets passionate and excited about it. And I wouldn't take him for a Tom Cruise fan, but he's absolutely right. Tom Cruise is a great action film star.
I can't wait to hear if it lives up to the expectations everyone's put on it for him.
Yeah, we'll see. He's going to be next Thursday, we'll know.
I'm friends with the monster.
Oh, he's a monster.
I'm sitting there tweeting.
Monster.
Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you. It's a guy, but I love you.
720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. We'll be back on Tuesday. He's in New York City, but Mary Sandberg is here. Dave Ennett, Mary Vandeveld, Steve Brzezinski, and on the line, Chuck Todd, the esteemed host of Meet the Press on NBC and our frequent guest here on the program. Although it's been about a month since we've talked to you, a lot of the listeners were like, "What's up? Did you guys can Chuck Todd?" And it's like, "No, we don't have that. We don't have that right." We're honored to have you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, happy to do it. It's the summer back and forth. We had British Open. Tiger Woods got in our way. So you play Tiger Woods.
Chuck, you tweeted yesterday that one can take a 9-day vacation, and in that 9 days, everything seemed to happen while little has changed.
Yeah. Well, that's what it was, just remarkable on one hand, and I give this advice all the time to colleagues who take time off and they're worried, especially younger ones. Oh, my God, I'm going to miss an opportunity to be on TV for this or miss an opportunity to report this. I said, hey, in the Trump era, I mean, literally, no matter what you think, you miss everything, and then the day you come back, it's as big as anything you miss. And when you think on one hand over that 9-day period that I happen to be out, Helsinki summit happened, which of course was, you know, extraordinarily explosive down the line, the Michael Cohen stuff and all this. So it's a reminder that every 10 days in the Trump era is like this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we've gone a 10-day period without it feeling as if we've had some consequential event that you think, oh my God, this is going to change everything. And then you realize, nope, nothing's changing yet. Now, at some point, I think we're going to crack on the under all this pressure, right? You can't keep piling stuff on without it sort of cracking somewhere, right? But we haven't cracked yet.
Well, it's so fascinating, too, because I was all prepared knowing you were on the program today to talk about the Michael Cohen tapes and what happened yesterday. And like you just said, in this era of the Trump administration, every day is different. Today, new stories have popped up. Let's start there. It seems that the president, if you read one way, the president has his hardball tactics are working when it comes to trade and a new deal with the EU. And if you read it the other way, he's blinked in the way that he's, you know, backed off of some of his thoughts and his rhetoric when it comes to tariffs, but a big day for the EU and the United States getting together to talk trade.
Well, they de-escalated, right? That's the good news. Beyond that, that's all that's happened, right? Is de-escalating, is the president has agreed to de-escalate this sort of trumped up trade war that he's tried to create with the EU. But I'll tell you, I'll be honest, I don't believe anything that came out of that agreement yesterday beyond that they've agreed to that the president has agreed to de-escalate his rhetoric for a while. As we've learned with this administration, every announcement is it's always less than what they claim it is.
Right.
So, I think when all is said and done, I have a sneaky suspicion that essentially it's all about the president blinking, where he was finally convinced, okay, are you going to fight China and the EU at the same time? If you're going to take on this China fight, you can't do both. And it sounds like if somebody finally got to the president and said, enough of this EU bashing.
Yeah.
So it looked like to me he did blink.
There's a little bit of cynicism in the Midwest, of course, in the circles here in Chicago and the papers as well, because today is the day that he comes to Illinois, not to Chicago, but to Granite City and to Dubuque to talk specifically in Dubuque about farming. And he can then say, look, I've got this deal. The EU is going to buy more soybeans. I'm your savior, plus this bailout. There seems to be some cynicism that this is politically motivated.
Some of it is 100% motivated, but you know what is it? I mean, that's the whole point of politics. So I never actually criticize that. That's what we have politics for. If politicians didn't make concessions based on sort of trying to please the public somewhere, then what's the point of a democracy? So on that score, hey, if they bend to political pressure or they feel it's a political buyout, well, that's what politics is about. That said, I'll be curious to see if this works. It certainly goes against what we had thought was conservative orthodoxy for the last generation, which was, we don't want to add more people to the public dole. But essentially, you know, the president's going to go to the Midwest today and brag about, hey, I've got $12 billion in federal welfare for you. And I know we normally rail against this idea of manipulating markets and not using the public dole, but hey, no, I'm doing it, so it's okay. It may work with some in his base. He certainly, the Trump base has given him a lot of patience on this stuff. They have not been voting on their own economic, on his policies and how they impact them personally, financially. This, put it this way. The president's smart to show up today in the Midwest and at least have something.
Right.
If he had nothing, right? If he had nothing to show for what this tariff war has done to the ag community, then it'd be even bigger problems.
Yeah, he would have canceled it anyway.
But right. Well, that's part of his political setup. Made it seem nicer yesterday. So then when he goes into Granite City today, he's they're like, oh, see, he cares.
He's got something to say.
Yeah.
That's right. He's got something to deliver to that crowd. But guess what? That crowd, they're not gonna be upset at anything he says.
Conservative Republicans in the House have started the process of impeachment for Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Is this, we were talking about this at the beginning of the show. Is this much ado about nothing that can't make it through the House and Senate because it's extremely partisan politics? Or is there something to take away from this action from some in the House?
Yeah, I've been struggling with this story this morning. It's like part of me wants to say that it's totally meaningless. Look, it's important to note that there is this faction in the House Republican Caucus, and we should say, I hate labeling these guys as the House conservatives. There are a lot of House conservatives who actually still believe in the rule of law. There are a lot of House conservatives that still actually believe in letting these things go. It's Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and some Trump muckrakers that are doing this. And I think, in fairness to the rest of the Republican Party, we should isolate on who's doing it. It's being driven by a handful of the Trump supporters in the House caucus. It isn't going to go anywhere, but it's significant in that it hands Fox prime time at night something to job out, right, and something to talk about and something to distract. So for the Trump echo chamber, it's a very significant piece of sort of phony news, yeah. Right? And nothing's going to come of it, but it feeds the echo chamber for a while and gives them something to nod. And I think that's what makes it politically, I think, relevant.
In the past, is that something when people are moving to start doing something like that, that type of process, do they always announce it, or is it just the climate and we're now where they're going to say, hey, we're going to start doing this against him?
Yeah.
The timing on this has more to do with how the House works and its weird procedures. Look, leadership tried to kill this a million times and basically told Meadows and Jordan, it's not getting a vote. You're not getting it on the floor. Well, right before a recess, there is a couple of bizarre maneuvers where they can force something onto the floor and force a vote. That's why the timing of this is now. It's the one time, it's like this one small period of time where the rank and file can sort of muckrake like this and basically force leadership to do something, to have a vote on something like this. So, and the timing is driven more by that. I mean, look, they've been, Meadows and Jordan, when it comes to Rod Rosenstein, come across as sort of chicken little, right? And I just wonder at what point does their shtick wear out, even among some of the sycophants. Yeah.
So more importantly, Chuck, did we hear you were at the All-Star game?
Oh yeah, I was. I've been looking forward to it ever since Washington got announced. I've never done it, it was fantastic. It was me and my son, my brother-in-law and his son, so our two boys. I just didn't. I ended up not having apple pie, but the only un-American thing about it. I mean, it was so much fun.
Did you go to the Derby too?
I did Fan Fest, did the Home Run Derby, game. We did everything. Went to the Futures game. Saw a kid throw 103 miles, threw 10 straight pitches of 100 miles an hour or more in that Futures game. I ran into Steve Garvey at the Fan Fest, who was my childhood baseball hero. Sadly, it was one of the few people who recognized him. But it was pretty. My son got to mess around in the outfield in the Home Run Derby. Anyway, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Chuck Todd, the host of Meet the Press, joins us here regularly on the Cochran Show. Chuck, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
There you go. Chuck Todd. Yeah, very interesting, too, that he's got to know his audience to be talking about his hero, Steve Garvey.
Yeah, I was thinking uttered those words.
Yeah, maybe say that to your New York media or your
I was biting my tongue because I really wanted to ask him if he thought that Bryce Harper cheated to win the Home Run Derby, but I decided to let that go.
We got to move on with the show, yes. But that was the exact thing. I'm like, we should hit this for Schwarbs.
Dave, you grew up in D.C. What was your team?
Well, they had another team way back when, the Washington Senators, before the Nationals.
Okay.
They became the Texas Rangers.
Did you follow? Were you Rangers guy, or did you go with Baltimore?
No, once they left.
What do you go with? Do you go to the Orioles if you're in Washington?
Well, that's what a lot of people did. But at that point, I was already ready to come to Chicago.
You go. All right, we got coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Bridget Gaynor and Pat Brady going to join us. Also, Kendall Coyne, gold medal winner with the U.S. Women's Olympic team, and she will be at the Blackhawks convention.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor will be here along with Pat Brady. We'll talk about a little bit of the national stuff we just talked about, Chuck Todd, but locally, Alderman Ed Burke calling for federal investigations into Willie Wilson's cash handouts at the church on Sunday. Talk about that. And also talk about protests. This idea that the mayor is going to change the way that he approaches the planned protest to shut down Lakeshore Drive on whether he supports it or not. It's a head-scratcher to me that any politician would, especially since the reverend who was organizing the protest has said this is about getting Rahm Emanuel out of office. I'm surprised there's even a conversation with the mayor at all.
Yeah, he shouldn't even be.
Yeah,
he's got other things to support. He doesn't need to support this.
It's such a head-scratcher to me. Like, the mayor supports the anti-mayor march. I love it. Only in Chicago, I guess. And think about the older mayors. I think of Mayor Daley. Can you imagine Mayor Daley being like, oh, no, I love it.
Yeah.
Let's protest. Everyone protest.
And that Willie Wilson thing, it's going to end up being one of those things like 15 years from now when people can't do certain things in campaigns. We'll be like, remember that time Willie was handing out cash to parishioners?
So. It is amazing. And maybe Willie Wilson gets away with that if he's running for the mayor of Tallahassee, because they're like, hey, one time, I guess a one-time thing is good, but the history of the city of Chicago and all of the shenanigans that have gone into political campaigns and running for office, it's tremendously out of touch. Maybe not illegal, but tremendously shady.
Yeah. So if you're not interested in politics and you want a break from this and you like talking about Christmas in July, I just want to send our listeners to our podcast. Pete Zimmerman, who's on our show, he and his wife Molly. Molly and Pete Save Christmas. They have this ongoing podcast where they review Hallmark and Lifetime Christmas movies. And there was one on this weekend, so they reviewed it. And
love it.
If you go to our app, the WGN Radio app, and you search under podcast, under Steve Cochran Show, the Molly and Pete Save Christmas podcast episode is there. And there's a lot of people that get really excited that have the countdown going on for Christmas, so I suggest you listen.
Well, Pete, you were out, and we'll talk about this. We got to get to the headlines here. But Pete, you were out when Butch McGuire, the guy who does the Christmas decorations at Butch McGuire's, died. And I know that you're a big Christmas guy. We can talk about that coming up. But let's do this. Let's take a break. And then we will get to the headlines and get to our 7 o'clock hour here on 720 WGN.
And now back to the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Skyline Studio on 720 WGN.
I know you're going to dig this.
WGN. It's Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve. He's back on Tuesday. He's in New York City. Can't wait to hear all about his trip coming up on Tuesday. Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Mary Vandeveld, Steve Grzanich, and myself, Justin Kaufman. We are here. We're holding down the fort in studio right now. Pat Brady and Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, and we are going to talk a little politics. It's Thursday. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Justin, just an FYI, because you're relatively new, you have to remember that Bridget's Steve's favorite guest.
Favorite.
And he told me I'm not supposed to disagree with her on anything.
So you might want to throw in a couple of times what a great guest I am.
Yeah, what a great guest.
So I feel at home.
No, Got it. Okay. I'm learning on the job here. Good to see both. All right, so there's a lot to talk about. We just talked with Chuck Todd about some of the national stories, and maybe we can delve into some of the local stuff. What's dominated the political storylines here in Chicago was the Willie Wilson at the mayoral candidate Willie Wilson at a Southside church on Sunday handing out cash to parishioners, something he said he's done in the past. He's a very philanthropic person. We know that as a businessman, he's his own personal cash, but the optics on it look like he's trying to buy votes. What do you, both of you have been in politics and have had campaigns to run. What do you make of the idea of handing out stacks of cash to would-be voters?
So, look, I thought Cass had a funny interpretation on it, which was basically like, look, people have been giving away taxpayer money for generations. You know, you come up with a boondoggle, you come up with a new project, it comes out of nowhere. I mean, so now they're just fully putting it out in the open. I mean, it's kind of like the politics we're living with now with Trump. You know, so much of this stuff is right out in the open of behavior you never thought would be conscionable. It's out there, and the question is, how do people really react?
And they're not even being creative about it.
Well, no, that, I agree completely. It's the same thing I thought. Every other politician right now is going out and handing taxpayer dollars. At least Willie's handing out his own cash. But the reality, let's go back to 2010. In the heat of the election, I remember in August, I was walking around downtown, and I called a big Republican donor. I go, why is it so quiet? Well, you know why it was quiet? Because Governor Quinn had discovered right before the election that there was a gang problem in the city of Chicago. So he came up with this thing, the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, and he dumped $53 million into the South Side area, and he didn't give it to the alderman. He gave it to the clergyman. That was under federal investigation, has been for a long time. But the point, I agree with Bridget, it goes on forever. It's terrible. It shouldn't happen. But in the case in 2010, that's $53 million in taxpayer money to solve the gang problem. I don't think it had much effect.
But at least the intended consequence.
No, there's no, that, no, no, don't even.
But was it to solve the gang problem?
Right. In August, he dumps $53 million into a place that he needs to votes to win. I know that's what he said it was, but we got to be realistic about it.
Well, I get the idea that you can be cynical about the approach, and there's under investigation, so there's definitely merits to that being a political move, not a one to solve community issues. But in this case, the optics, I mean, there's pushback on the idea of, I mean, the video of Mr. Wilson with a stack of cash. I mean, he's got a stack like I've only seen in cartoons. This idea of him taking off the top, handing $100 bills to people walking out of the church, it just doesn't look good.
Look, okay, all joking aside, it is terrible. You can say it's for paying property taxes, and property taxes are due next Wednesday, and you know, people have had an issue, and there's a lot of stuff with late tax and property tax, but it's terrible, just like so much of what's going on in the rest of politics is terrible. You think you've hit a new low, and then you realize, oh, I'm not in the back of the cave, I'm just in the mouth of the cave. And it even goes even further. And to some degree, it's easy to joke about, but it's the coarsening of our politics. And what happens is, you think that there's a level that people won't go beyond, and then they go beyond it, and there's no sanction, and so then what's next? It's just something else.
Yeah, if you're a business and you see that, say you're trying to want to come here, go, this is how it works?
Right.
I mean, it's that blatant?
Now, the other part of this political story is that Governor Rauner was in the building, and Governor Rauner had an association with Willie Wilson giving his not-for-profit money. It doesn't look good for him as well, as he's trying to make inroads into a community that usually doesn't vote for him, to be associated with candidates that are giving out cash at an event. Well, does that make the governor look bad?
Yeah, but let's just, whether he was in the building, whether he knew what was happening, in the last election cycle, he gave an enormous amount of money to various clergy members. So this isn't like whether you're handing it out in cash or whether you're sending it through a foundation, it's still just like the stuff that Pat was just talking about, you know, the gang remediation piece. You're trying to curry favor with people with money, and it's either public money or it's private money, but it's still not, you know, hitting the streets with the grassroots organizing or having a message or trying to, you know, tell people that this is why you should support me. It's trying to strip away everything that's about the message and the policy, and saying, I'm just going to appeal directly to your interest.
Well, that's, you could take it one step further and go to how Springfield operates and how the speaker operates and how the public sector and private sector trade unions support him. And so it's the same thing. Maybe I think there should be in a big discussion on campaign finance reform, but we never seem to get there.
Is there a chance that he did that to kind of mock the system? Like, I'm in
the governor?
No, Willie Wilson.
Oh, Willie Wilson.
You know,
it was a meta giveaway,
right? Because like he doesn't need to win. You know, he's all set. Like
it was $100,000, wasn't it?
It ended up being $40,000. That's the number now. But at the beginning, it was as big as $300,000. That was $100,000. Now it's $40,000. But anyway, it's still thousands of dollars. Yeah.
I don't think that he was mocking the system. I think he was going to people and saying, I'm the generous guy. And in fairness to Willie Wilson, he's incredibly generous. He's been philanthropic for years, but now he's running for mayor, so he's in a different category. His behavior takes on kind of the reputation of the whole system, and people might say, yeah, well, then it's matching the reputation of the whole system. Because what's different than that with someone who can write a $200,000 check to a candidate? I mean, you hand someone $40,000 in church, or you write them a $200,000 check, you know, what's the difference? And so this gets back to the campaign finance reform.
Does he really think, though, because we've all been down there in different times in different neighborhoods, I don't think people are inherently that corrupt.
No.
You know, we're like, oh, I'm going to vote for Willie now. You know, I'm taking your money. You're an idiot, but that's not going to change my vote.
right.
I think they vote their needs. I mean, their issues in those particular communities, I think, is crime and the gang problem. So they could.
And maybe property tax relief, which Willie Wilson is playing. That's where he's finding strength in handing out cash. Pat Brady, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor in studio. We're talking politics this hour. Coming up, we'll do the most valuable person on the planet. Also, a little bit later in the hour, Kendall Coyne, the gold medal winner, will be with us after the 7:30 news.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And we'll never be royal.
Colleen from Chicago won the 4-pack. family tickets, the four tickets to the Chicago White Sox with the Royals on Thursday, August 2nd at 1:10. Keep listening for that sounder. It's your cue to call in to win seats to the Sox all regular season long. Now you heard the sounder right there. The Don't Stop Believing sounder. Colleen, congratulations. In studio with us right now, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor and Pat Brady. It's Thursdays, we're talking politics, but it's also 7:20, so we want to talk about the most valuable person on the planet for today, Thursday, July 26, 2018, and that is Felicia Davis. Felicia Davis is a co-founding member of the Southside Giving Circle, a group that, through the Chicago Foundation for Women, will issue grants to groups dedicated to helping black women and girls. Felicia, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for having me.
So where does this idea come from? The Chicago Foundation for Women have given out grants and helping organizations, but talk specifically about the Southside Giving Circle.
So one of our co-founding members, Nicole, last November started hosting a couple of brunches at her house and with like-minded women who were Southsiders who really wanted to, you know, get in where they are and to put their money really where their mouths were. We all work in fields related to helping our communities, and we thought you don't have to be a millionaire to make change in our communities. And so we've been working since November, and we're happy to have some press about the activities.
And it's an amazing idea, and the idea of helping black businesses, specifically female-run businesses or women who are on boards, that is instrumental because there has been so much about trying to give back to the community.
Yes, and so we are specifically trying to invest in the economic, social, and political power of black women and girls in all of the communities on the South Side and also in the South Suburbs. So, you know, members are, I live in Chatham, members from Woodlawn, Bronzeville, Jackson Park, as far south as Madison, working together to support organizations whose specific mission it is to nurture and to support young black women and girls, and those organizations also have to be led by a black woman.
Hey, Felicia, it's Bridget Gaynor. How are you?
Hey, Bridget. I'm good, thanks. I heard you in studio today.
Yeah. So, look, I think that, first of all, I want to give a shout out to Black Club Chicago who wrote this story, because this is, we don't hear about these things unless there's great local news, and I think that was amazing. So now we know about these great things that are happening and more people can support you. But, you know, for those of you who don't know much about Felicia, she's a police officer for many, many years, grew up on the South Side, worked in city colleges, worked at City Hall, and it's people who actually are living in the neighborhood who have a sense of what people need, because it isn't always, you know, we got to be neighborhood up, not, you know, downtown down or City Hall down. And when you have your finger to the pulse, that's who you figure out who's doing good things. And so there's no replacing that local knowledge. And so I think you guys are incredible for doing this. But it also gives people hope who are trying to start something good.
Right.
You know, through the Cook County Land Bank, we've worked with so many entrepreneurs, and the biggest influx of people taking on rehabs of vacant housing has been African-American women, many of whom have no other backing in real estate. And a lot of what has happened, it's been a network of one woman tells another, and then they have a network of each other, because you can't do this stuff alone. So I think the fact that you guys are out there and just putting an emphasis, having a focus on supporting these businesses and efforts is going to make more people think, you know what, maybe I can do it because I'm not going to be by myself.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And that's our whole point. You do not, everyone can start. We're projected to award $34,000 in grants this December. This started with modest investments by each of the women. We have 36 members, 35 of which identify as black. And we intend to award grants annually or invest in programs that support the unique needs and inequities faced by black women and girls, as I talked about. And we are so thrilled and excited. Our membership is closed right now for 2018. It's been overwhelming, but we will have new members joining us in early 2019 for our second year of awards, and we anticipate growing. This is just the beginning. We anticipate growing and being able to invest more fully in our communities on the South Side and the South Suburbs.
Hey, Felicia, it's Bridget. One more time. So, as also a fellow Southsider, I wonder, what if people just wanted to help you add to the amount of money that you're able to give? Maybe not join, but how do people support what you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. We are accepting donations. You can do that through CFW.org. There is a specific button that says the Southside Giving Circle, and whatever folks donate, we will be coalescing and be able to award more money in this grant cycle this December.
Right, and Chicago Foundation for Women is the oldest foundation in Chicago for women. Incredible board, incredible organization. So anyone who's interested, you guys have the local knowledge. They have the you know, the whole infrastructure. So I think it's an incredible way to reach out locally, but know that it's well spent and well supervised. Yeah.
There you go. Felicia Davis, a co-founding member of the Southside Giving Circle, our most valuable person on the planet for today, July 26, 2018. Felicia, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Go. That's great. And look at this. Co-host Bridget Gaynor.
I know.
She knows everybody.
And you know, it's this type of work is even more important because, you know, it's one thing. There's a lot of unicorns and things that give money that you don't know where it came from and the face. And these people are walking around in their community and they're like, that woman mm-hmm. supported mm-hmm. me as a woman. And I have like an example of somebody doing something. So it perpetuates itself, you know, in a way that doesn't happen if you put faceless money.
I wonder though, because we've heard from the mayor and you heard from the Cook County Board as well that there needs to be more investment in neighborhoods and communities. As much as I love what Felicia's doing in the Southside Giving Circle, isn't it on the financial community or the private sector here in Chicago to get more involved with the neighborhoods and be able to support this so that the Southside Giving Circle isn't the only one that's giving money to female entrepreneurs on the Southside?
Sure. Look, this is all of our job. This is our city, and you can't just sit in your own little area, but it's hard because people want to help and get involved. The question is, how do they do it in a way that makes sense? I find this all the time with the work that I do with women in the Cook County Jail. There's a ton of people that want to participate. They want to help. They want to engage. They don't know how to access that system. And it's the same thing with the neighborhood support that Felicia and the Queen Makers are doing, which is people want to invest in our neighborhoods. They want to invest in our city. They, you know, just like all of us, they grew up here. They're raising their kids here. They've made a lifetime commitment. But how do you do it? And how do they do it in a way that makes sense? And this is why efforts like Felicia's, when people step up and say, hey, this is the path to do it, is so important because people want to be connected to others in our city.
And sometimes they know better. You know, wait for the government and all those people to get on board with where it should go and things, but these people are living it, so they know exactly who's in need and who they can help best.
And these people are also living in the most unfair property tax system probably in the world for where they live, for what they get paid, so that needs to be reformed too to make it affordable.
That's Pat Brady, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor in studio. We'll come back. We're going to talk with Kendall Coyne, the gold medal winner. She'll be at the Blackhawks convention, and we'll continue our conversation. Let's talk about whether or not politicians should be supporting protests. We'll do that conversation coming up here on 720 WGN.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Seven twenty WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran is back on Tuesday. Sandberg's here, Dave Ennett, Mary Vandevelt, Steve Grzanich, Pat Brady as well, and, of course, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor. We're talking politics this hour.
Why do I have this image of Cochran walking around Manhattan in shorts?
Oh, man. He said he was buying new shoes.
Yeah, he was going to the New Balance store to get new walking shoes.
I was telling her, I said, just wait till you get to SoHo and buy some new kicks down there, like at the Adidas, something cool, something hip-hop. You know,
does he have to go to New York to go to the New Balance store?
No, he was buying. That's the one he's going to get new shoes. Yeah.
So we're talking politics this morning. Local caller 847 says, Justin, Willie Wilson's helping to invest in the neighborhood. To debate that he's doing something wrong, it's bad karma. Let him go ahead. He should be applauded. And there's some truth to that. The idea that, you know, he has, and I have said this, I've been consistent in saying that he has had a philanthropic background. This is something he has done before. I just think the optics are bad during an election.
Well, as far as the Alderman Burke calling for an investigation, it's all on his intent. And it depends on what he says when he's handing the money out.
Yeah, right.
If he's saying,
vote for me,
then he's got a problem.
Yeah, right.
Pretty easy to prove.
The other issue here seems to be, it's becoming political, it's about around protests. We saw a lot of political strife when it came to the shutting down of the Dan Ryan, Father Flager a couple weeks back. And now we see a new planned protest for shutting down Lakeshore Drive and going to Wrigley Field. The idea here, yesterday the mayor was asked about it, and he said, they asked about, you know, how how he was going to handle it, and he said, well, I'm not sure yet because I'm not sure if I'm going to support this march. And it just made me think about the idea of a mayor supporting really an anti-mayor march in this way. The Reverend was on with us talking about he wants the mayor out. He doesn't like what the policies. So I don't understand why a protest needs the backing of an a mayor in any form. I'm confused by that, especially being a Chicagoan.
Look, I think the dilemma about supporting it is more about the campaign than it is about the job. Your job as a mayor is to support free speech, and if someone's going to have a public gathering, to have the right police out there and make sure it's safe and the rest of the people can live their life around it. So that's how you support it in your official capacity. I think the thing that he's trying to figure out is, I'm running for re-election. I'm not popular with this community. How do I, throw them a bone? There was just another video released from COPA yesterday, the police accountability organization. And, so I think that it's a political math question. It's not really a mayor math
question. Well, it sounds almost like a threat, Pat, this idea that if I don't support it, then, we'll crack down on this thing.
Whatever happened to the old saying, good government's good politics? Let them protest, make sure nobody gets hurt, and it's over in a day. You drag the story out for a week when you make statements like that. He's the mayor. Do your job. If they are rightfully protesting, they're doing it legally, let them do it.
If they weren't involving the word Wrigley Field in when they did their press conference to say that they were going to do this, I don't even think the mayor would be weighing in anyway. I think something about the Wrigley Field, like all of a sudden, well, this is such a disruption to regular life
and
over
that's
there.
The point of the protest.
Well, here's my question, though, and we're all sympathetic to the crime problem here, and we all know it's a problem. But what's the point of some of this? To what effect? What was changed by either of these rallies? We all know there's a problem. And I understand that it probably makes some sense to go where the problem's not occurring to get people's attention, but what's the net effect? What's going
to
change?
Is it to get the attention of Chicago residents, or is it to put political pressure on the office holders?
It's both. It's to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. Because if you're living with disruption and crime every day, and other people are not, just based on their zip code and their income, why should the pain not be shared? So, of course, I think in some ways protesting in a neighborhood that doesn't have it makes a heck of a lot more sense than shutting down the Dan Ryan, where you're impacting the people in the community that already understand that there's a problem. So,
but that's my question.
Point.
I see Father Flager on for years doing these things, but what's the end game? What's the ask? We do the protests, it's over. The mayor's mad at for 2 days, and it's not a story anymore. What? To me, I'd rather see some policy discussion.
But you wonder if there's going to be consistent protest culture in this town where it continues to disrupt, that there will be an uproar of residents saying, we need more resources or more allocation to this issue because it is affecting the entire city.
The why do it or the what's the impact? It's to make sure that the issue doesn't get forgotten by everyone who doesn't have to deal with it every day. There doesn't have to be a direct outcome from a protest. The point of a protest is to raise awareness of something and start to change people's minds. And to be honest, you have no idea the number of people who might realize and think differently about a problem once they have to confront it or they read about it in the news 5 days in a row. So, this is, as we said before, all of us live in the city, and you can't necessarily wall yourself off because the bad things that happen in one place affect the entire, it's like part of your body, not working. It affects your whole system. And
right,
so,
you've got a bad tooth. That can take down your whole system.
Right. So,
but the thing is with this, there's a prosecutor in the late 80s and 90s, and I saw a lot of this up close and personal, and the same problems existed. They're more acute now because I think there's just more guns, but I think we need to start really having a real frank policy discussion on what do we block it off? I mean, do we call in the National Guard? Do we do something more radical? Because whatever everybody's been talking about, it's not really working. That's my point. There's got to be a solution to this problem.
Are you surprised, and we got a Kendall Coyne's coming up here, so I want to break, but are you surprised that the issue of violence, especially in the city of Chicago, hasn't played out more in the gubernatorial race, hasn't played out more in the early stages of the mayoral campaign?
Well, I think it's too early on the mayoral campaign, but I think on the governor's race, it feels like the only thing people talk about is how much money each candidate has, and that sucks up all of the oxygen in the room.
And they don't want to own that. They don't want to step out first and say, this is what I'm going to do. They just don't want to own the issue. It's the mayor's issue.
Look, the answer to the violence issue is jobs and economic opportunity and reform of policing. And actually, it's reform of public safety. The police are one smaller portion of the whole idea of public safety, because, you know, you can't put the entire idea of people's feeling safety safe in on the police, because when you, you know, you close schools, you close mental health institutions, you, yes, you need police reform, but you also need jobs and economic opportunity. All of that stuff is comes together, and until you solve it holistically, just focusing in on the police is not going to be enough to solve the problem.
Yeah, the food deserts, the you can't buy a home if it's too far from your job. I mean, there's a lot, just so many problems.
Transportation.
But we never talk about that. We talk about a protest up, you know, at Wrigley Field.
And you know, you said, Pat, if you is it a time for something extreme, like calling in National Guard, closing it off, whatever, but we had like those people in from Silver, the Silver Block Party people.
And
they
Room,
that live in those areas, and they say, you know, 60% of the people are doing the right things and not. So they
more than 60%.
You know, like they said, it's not all. We just only know the.
Well, that's what hits the headlines, right?
Well, that's, but even back to the late 80s and 90s, when the mom would come to court to get the kid out, it was they were working two jobs and were taken off to get down there to post. But there are, I'd say it's a lot more than 60% that are trying to do the right
thing. Well, obviously, this conversation continues, and it'll be one that we continue on this program. Pat Brady, you got a big event tonight, the Roskam.
Kasten
debate. Is it a debate or is it a forum? What are you
doing?
It's
a forum. It's the Lincoln Forum that we talk about a lot, that Eric Edelstein.
Yeah.
Who's usually on with me? We about a year ago to say.
But now you got an upgrade.
Exactly. I will. These Democrats.
We'll let him know
that, these Democrats just can't get along like us Republicans.
Right. So tonight it's sold out event.
Sold out, and we think this is the race. It's the 6th congressional district, which is the western DuPage kind of county. It goes up to the north a little bit too, but it's a national focus because it's kind of a litmus test. A lot of people think, I'm not sure if I agree, as to whether or not the Democrats can retake the House. Now, I've been hearing for years that Peter Rossum's going to lose, and he always ends up winning by 15 points, but it's a national focus race right now. And it's been drawing a lot of attention because there's threats of protesters and things like that. But inside the Lincoln Forum, which is what I was getting at, Eric and I started this because we want to have a place for people to have good public policy discussions without the bickering, and it's a nonpartisan event. There's not going to be any protesting or screaming or yelling.
Inside.
Mike Flannery from Fox News, one of the brightest political minds I think in the country, is going to moderate.
There you go. Pat Brady, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, thanks for being here. Kendall Coyne coming up on the program, but thanks you guys for talking politics on this Thursday.
Here comes Kendall Coyne with a shot. Score! 23 seconds into the third period, the United States is on the board.
My power's turned up, starting right now, I'll be strong.
720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. He's back on Tuesday. On the line with us, a gold medal winner, Kendall Coyne. She is not only a gold medal winner from the women's hockey team that won in South Korea over the in the Winter Olympics, but, of course, a member of the Blackhawks organization. She will be at the convention coming up this weekend. Kendall, thanks for joining us. Good to talk to you.
You too, Justin. Thanks so much for having me today.
So what's it mean for you to be a part of this convention? I mean, to be a part of the Blackhawks, we talked about that, but to be a part of the convention, especially now being a gold medal winner, to go in front of fans and have that opportunity this weekend.
Oh, it's tremendous, and obviously it goes without saying. I know a lot of the Blackhawks fans have seen gold medal winners before, because there's quite a few on the Hawks, but just to be able to bring home the first gold medal in 20 years in U.S. women's hockey history, and to be able to share that with so many fans, and just to be treated as an equal from the Blackhawks organization, and to see the respect they give us along with their players is tremendous.
I was at the UC when they announced when you came back with the gold medal, and you guys skated on the ice, and the feeling in the building. You know, to be excited as a fan, just be in the seats and everybody doing the standing O. It was intense for me. How was it for you?
It was electrifying. It was definitely one of the coolest, if not the coolest, moments of my career post Olympics, and not obviously in the Olympics, but the coolest honoring I've definitely received as a player and a person, and obviously a Chicago native.
Well, let me ask you about another cool moment, which was the ESPY Awards recently in Los Angeles, and your team was honored as the best, having taken part in the best game, the win over Canada. Kind of describe the night, Kendall, the whole walk in the red carpet and being up there on the stage and all of that.
Oh, it was a tremendous 48 hours. actually the night before the ESPYs, our team won probably an award that is more important to us. It was the Sports Humanitarian Team of the Year Award, and it's something my teammates and I take very seriously, is just leaving the game better than it was, and trying to inspire kids to follow their dreams. So to be named the Humanitarian Team of the Year was incredible, and then to follow that up with the ESPYs the next day, you know, it was, I remember watching the ESPYs every year, like I did the Olympics every 2 years, and being like, wow, it'd be really cool to be there one day. And to be on that stage and to receive an award for best game was amazing. I mean, think about how many games are played every single day across the world. So to be honored in that magnitude, for a sport that's not relatively covered as much as, you know, we'd hope it would be, it was incredible.
Last time we saw you, Kendall, you were in studio, and it was with your then fiance, now husband, and you guys were heading off to his tux fitting for your wedding.
That's right.
And you also ate pizza in studio, if you remember, because we had pizza in that day. So you had the wedding already, but I understand you delayed the honeymoon.
Yes, we did. You know, he actually, I just left Midway, just dropped him off at the airport. He's heading to camp today for the Los Angeles Chargers. So, you know, just when duty calls, you can't really take time off and sit on a beach for a week when you're, you know, you have a job to do. So we're going to plan on going on a honeymoon next year for our one-year anniversary.
But you've been busy. You've been playing the Chicago Pro Hockey League during mm-hmm. July. What's that been like?
Oh, it's been an amazing experience. You know, I always say to my parents, I'm like, I really haven't had the opportunity to play at home since high school. You know, I went to school in Boston, and then with a national team, we haven't come through here much. And so just to see all the fans and to be out there with obviously incredible players and to see them respect me as I respect them, it's pretty cool. And last night there were a ton of young girls in the stands. Some had signs. It just puts chills down my back, and it just shows the growth of the game and how far we've come. And, you know, if I can continue to inspire, young athletes to pick up some hockey skates, I'd love to do so. And, but it's been awesome. And, I'm really thankful for the opportunity that, you know, my home state and home city allows me, you know, and looks at me as an equal and lets me play with the guys.
When I was in seventh grade, I had a T-shirt that said, whatever boys can do, girls can do better, Kendall. And so I know usually you're playing against girls, but have there been any moments during those 4-and-4 games where you've done something against one of the boys where you're like, you know what? See, that's what I bring to this game. I'm better than you.
Not really. I mean, there's some pretty tough competition out there. I would just say I think a lot of them are little hesitant because I'm a little bit shorter than them, and they're like, never played against someone this short in a while. you know, and I think my stick length throws off some people with passing and stuff, but no, it's been awesome. And a lot of the guys that are on the team I'm on, I've grown up playing with, and you know, it just seems like another skate for us. And just to be able to play in front of fans, and especially in Chicago, it's been awesome. It's only 3 weeks in.
There you go. Kendall Coyne, the gold medal winner, who is part of the Blackhawks organization, will be at the Blackhawks convention this weekend. Kendall, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, and have a great weekend. Excited for the convention.
There you go. Yeah, that's exciting. How great is that? Another reason to go out and watch that pro league. How great is it to have also gold medal winners from the U.S. women's hockey team play alongside maybe a Jonathan Toews and some aspiring young hockey players? It's awesome. It's awesome.
She's an incredible role model. And we're lucky to have her in our city as ours, you know, and part of the Blackhawks. It's she's going to do amazing things.
And a regular guest here on the Cochran Show. All right, so coming up, Dean Richards, and a little bit later in the program, Phil Rosenthal, the longtime creator of Everybody Loves Raymond, will be here. We'll have a conversation about his second course of his documentary show on Netflix. All that coming up here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you...
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than when I should. Yeah, honey,
WGN, not the show. Dean Richards joins us every day at 8 o'clock. Talk entertainment, the man, the myth, the legend, Dean Richards.
Steve's not here because he was not inducted with a Kennedy Center honor.
Or maybe that's where he's at. That's why he's going east.
Going to Washington to accept?
Well, he's going to New York, but maybe he'll take the bullet train from New York to D.C. to get his honor and then go back.
Well, maybe. That's possible. He probably should know that the awards are not given out for a while.
Well, that's why he's there.
He likes to get there early.
He loves to be early, yeah.
Steve, when you think early to anything, you think Steve Cochran.
Yeah, sure, right. Well, the Kennedy Center nominees, or honorees, I guess, were announced today. Talk a little bit about this. This is something that is esteemed when it comes to arts and culture.
Oh, I think it is. I think it's a nice honor. It traditionally honors individuals for their contributions to the arts, and really anyone has been honored with this. And the honorees this year include Cher, which I think is kind of cool, because really, if you think about her career in music, in the movies, really in everything, Cher has done it all and survived quite a bit. She will be honored this year, as will Reba McEntire and composer Philip Glass. Read credits on movies, you see Philip Glass's name often. He does a lot of movies. He does a lot of New Age music. And also the Grammy-winning jazz saxophonist Wayne Shorter, which is formidable as well if you're in jazz circles.
Yeah.
So they... Normally it's an individual that gets honored for the Kennedy Center. But for the first time ever, they are awarding a Kennedy Center honor to a Broadway musical, Lin-Manuel Miranda's hip-hop history lesson in Hamilton. So that's a first.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's a great cross-section of artists to think about. They do a good job of representing a bunch of different genres, so it's not just people who are, who do top 40 music. There's a lot there. Cher, what a time for her. I mean, with the musical and being politically active on social media, but also this honor. She seems to be having a little pop culture comeback.
I was going to say that, with Mamma Mia, I mean, Cher is very top of mind right now, because everybody is coming out of that movie seeing Mamma Mia 2, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and saying that Cher steals the show, and she does. Very, very definitely she does. She's on a tour. What she is saying is going to be her final tour. Not that she has said that two or three times in the past, but she's saying that this is going to be it for touring and doing Vegas shows and so forth. But, she's having a super great time. Now, the big question about this is whether or not President Trump will be at the Kennedy Center honors. It has been tradition through the years, up until last year, that the president would always attend. And it was Norman Lear and some of the other honorees last year who said that they were not going to show up if the president was there. So the President Trump decided not to show up last year. This year, Cher has been more than active on Twitter.
She's outspoken against Trump.
She is very, very outspoken against Trump, as is Lin-Manuel Miranda. During the hurricane crisis, which really continues in Puerto Rico, during the middle of all that, Lin-Manuel Miranda was extremely critical of the president during all of that. So my guess is that President Trump will not be attending again this year. I can't remember if it was Wayne Shorter or Philip Glass. I think it was Philip Glass who said he wishes the president would show up so that all of them could sit down together, even though they have differences of opinions, and talk things out.
Well, it's always great. I love the honor of having the president in the room, just because it reinforces how important arts and culture are to the United States of America. So that's the only thing. But obviously, if you're the president and the honorees are saying they don't want you there and it's going to cause a sideshow and a distraction, then maybe, that's not important to him.
I would like to see the president there just to get those reaction shots when they honor Cher, and they're singing "I Got You, Babe" and "Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves" and "Dark Lady" and some of her songs, just to see him. Remember how President Obama used to sing along and dance along and move back and forth with the music. That's the part that I like, watching people. The reaction shots of people with no rhythm doing that.
Between the Cher honor and the Reba, the music alone is going to be quite an impressive.
Yeah,
those are two strong, important female people in the world.
Bet.
You know,
yeah.
their impact is,
not to mention they'll probably do a performance of Hamilton. I mean, there's going to be a lot of great stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, Cher is more than just music, and Reba McEntire had a TV show, but it's primarily music this year. That's Hamilton, of course, is theater, but ultimately it's a theater changing kind of a musical like we've never seen before, but it's a primarily music oriented Kennedy Center this year.
Well, it's about time Reba gets one, just because she sang her own theme song for the Reba TV show.
Very
and
true.
I always thought that was that's the best theme song of all time. And a single mom who works too hard. Like, I love that. I'm so into that theme song.
If you had offered me a year's salary to remember that theme song, I would have had to pass on.
There was a moment in my life, and I almost can do it, where I could do the whole theme song, like, I just, because they had it in syndication, and I just love the idea that Reba, as a country star, she was playing a yeah, here it is. So great.
Who I am is who I want to be. A single mom who works too hard, who loves her kids and never stops, with gentle hands and the heart of a fighter.
I'm a survivor.
Yeah,
that's a good track right there. Now I want to watch that show, right?
I am seeing a Justin Kaufman video recreation coming to the web sometime near you. Justin in a red wig.
Dean, we were just treated to Justin doing air guitar to that now.
That's one of my favorite songs. That's one of my favorite theme songs, beyond Bill Rosenthal's theme song for his travel food show. All right, Dean Richards is here. We'll talk about Demi Lovato, of course, update on her condition.
Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
The Kennedy Center Honors coming up December 2nd. The honorees were announced today. Let's keep moving. Dean Richards
on. Steve was not inducted.
And he was not.
I just want to throw that in every 5 minutes.
Of course, Demi Lovato.
Hey, somebody was asking the date of the Kennedy Center.
Yeah, December 2nd is when it's going to be. Demi Lovato update. Yesterday, of course, we talked about it. The day before, she was she had apparent overdose of some sort of drug. What's the update on this story? She's back. Is she out of the hospital?
She is still in the hospital. Yesterday, she was visited by her ex-boyfriend, Wilmer Valderrama. Spent about 2 hours there visiting. Apparently, even though they broke up, they're still pretty close friends. But what was reported by People magazine yesterday might give us a little more insight into what happened is that Monday night, apparently she was at a friend's apartment and they were binging. They did not say what they were binging, but they said that they were binging and that they had the opioid antidote Narcan on hand at the party. Hmm. So who doesn't have that anytime throw a party, right? Really? You want to keep that handy.
Right. That's like Pulp Fiction.
That and extra
snacks. Exactly.
You
like
know, in Pulp Fiction, they had that thing
exactly
ready.
Exactly correct. Yeah. So they know that happened. She is in stable condition right now at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. She's awake and alert, apparently, but still no details on what might have caused the overdose right now. So, you know, we're waiting to hear that. But
Dean probably knows this, but I'd read an article one time that there's a special area of Cedars-Sinai for the celebrities. That they have like a wing kind of thing because
wouldn't be
they
surprised.
Know because LA is so celebrity driven.
It is the celebrity hospital. Yeah. I mean, it's
you can't go past a certain point because that's where the celebrities are sick.
That's right. That's right. The locked doors.
Well, and there has been problems. I know when Britney Spears was in the hospital, you know, employees shared her information.
Yeah,
right.
I've been. I'm in LA all the time, and Cedars-Sinai is not far from where we normally do the interviews, and you can always tell when there's some big celebrity like Britney or a Kardashian or somebody. I imagine it's probably going on now with Demi Lovato, but the paparazzi is camped out in front of the hospital. It's like a crowd of people on the street and a parade's about to go by.
And just imagine
that's how thick the photographers
are. If you're actually sick and you have to go to the hospital and you have to deal with getting through the paparazzi who's stalking a celebrity.
Right. Well, that's I'm sure they have a special entrance. I'm sure they have a special private entrance, special wing, special all that, where they keep the 55-gallon drums of Botox when celebrities show up.
All right, let's talk about the Game of Thrones spinoffs that have been cut. This is interesting because they just announced that the new show, or the last season, and what the dates are going to be. And there was a lot of talk about Game of Thrones continuing with different characters, but that's not the case?
Yeah, there were supposed to be five different spinoffs. That's what we had counted. And yesterday, HBO had a bunch of meetings for different things yesterday, but one of the things is one in which they said that all but one of those spinoffs is either canceled or on hold. And the one spinoff that will definitely be happening will be the prequel to Game of Thrones. It'll be set about 100 years before what we know from the current show right now. But some of the character spinoff shows apparently are being just being put on hold or are just not going to happen at this point.
Dean, what's the comedy that's getting a sequel?
This was the other HBO meeting that took place yesterday. Jane Fonda was there speaking to the press because there's a new documentary about her life that's going to be coming out. But somebody asked her about one of the most successful comedies of all time, a film that is on the list of the 100 funniest films of all time from the American Film Institute, and it's 9 to 5, the movie that she did with Lily Tomlin and Dolly Parton.
Right.
Jane Fonda said that she is executive producing it, that it's going to happen. They're working with the writers right now, and that she, Lily, and Dolly are all intending on being in the film. So whether it's centered around them or centered around, you know, some other actresses who are going through harassment behavior, chauvinistic behavior that we saw in the first movie, that we don't know plot lines and things yet. But could there be a more timely, could there be a better time for a movie like this now with the Me Too movement and this movie that was all about being harassed by a boss? To bring something like this back again.
That was a great movie, and I love that cast. And even though like the movie Book Club wasn't my cup of tea, it is so great to see people over the age of 35, women on screen doing things. You know, it is because life doesn't end once we all.
Yeah, it's a tough age for actors. Yeah. I mean, actresses have told me about this, that, you know, there's almost, it's almost like when you get older, like when you're 50 plus or 60 plus, it becomes easier. But there's that sort of that mid-range age where it's kind of hard to find jobs, acting jobs, for actresses in some of these roles. But I love this movie, and of course we played a clip from the movie on TV this morning, and now I can't get that 9 to 5 song out of my head. I'm going to be singing it all day, hearing the typewriter in my head all day. And right now some kid is asking their mom, "Mom, what's a typewriter?"
All right, real quick, as we run out of time, celebrity real estate, you got a new listing.
Well, I don't actually have this listing. I turned this listing down myself for a variety of reasons. But Russell Simmons, the hip-hop mogul, is apparently liquidating all of his real estate right now. He's got his L.A. home on the market for $8 million. He's got his New York penthouse on the market now for $10 million. And he's closing down his West Hollywood yoga studio. And I don't have a price on that. He is the subject of about a dozen sexual misconduct and assault allegations that go back for decades. So he's apparently cleaning out a lot of his assets right now instead of having all of this that may be in jeopardy later on. So
interesting.
I have a very high standard for the clients I represent.
I like the integrity that comes with the Dean Richard Real Estate Group.
That's right. You know what? I don't wear this yellow sport jacket without some integrity. Which I know seems like an oxymoron, but
maybe we'll skip on offering, in solidarity with the Dean Richard.
I'm just gonna leave it out there. If somebody is interested, Richard Simmons. That's hilarious, Russell Simmons. Come on, let's sweat to the oldies.
I'm selling my place.
He's Russell Simmons. apparently is in Bali right now, where there is no extradition treaty with the United States, in case anyone's interested in his property.
Yeah.
I would love if Richard Simmons bought it, though.
Yeah, right. That would put it all, bring it full circle. Dean Richards, of course, WGN TV joins us every day at 8 o'clock. Dean, thanks for joining us.
See you guys.
All right, there you go. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Swap meet time. Greg Flamm is here, 312-981-7200. If you got some memorabilia, some collectibles, some junk, do you want to see what it's worth? Greg is here, and we will do that right after the news. So stay with us here on 720 WGN.
I'm a survivor.
WGN, Justin Kaufman in for Steve. Steve's back on Tuesday. Riding Shotgun with Sandberg, Dave Enid, Grzanich, Mary Vandeveld, and Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker. The swap meet happens every Thursday, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. This is the segment where we evaluate your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. See if for that thing that you've kept from apartment to house to crawl space, if it's worth anything. Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, joins us every Thursday. Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here. Hello, everyone.
All right. So we've already got people on the line, 312-981-7200. People are definitely interested in finding out what their junk is worth today. But before we get there, let's talk about some of the junk that you've brought in studio. You do this every week, and it's always fun to see the fun stuff that you found. So what do we have here?
I brought in two items. The big item was a Tommy Hilfiger jean jacket. It's kind of considered, you know, the white whale or holy grail of Tommy Hilfiger. Well, Tommy Hilfiger, anyway. And I got it for less than $10, and it goes for about $275 to $325.
What? Why did someone not know that they had this to give it away for
$10?
They
must not.
Was it a garage sale?
But what was funny is there were Disney pins on the front of the jacket, and the woman was like, no, you can't take that. And I'm like, oh, man, I just found this great jean jacket. And she just wanted the Disney pins. I'm like, okay. Yeah, so that worked out.
It's the one with the Tommy Hilfiger giant patch on the back. It has the contrasting cuff, the stars, and inside it has the American flag and the lining.
Which supermodel wore this and nothing else on the magazines of back in the day?
Yeah, Cindy Crawford probably was.
And one of the reasons I brought it in is, you know, trying to show people what they might have in their closets.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, so many people call in with signed baseballs and bats, and this is worth probably their whole sports collection sometimes. So
it's amazing just to see I mean, the 80s feels that you've given me with the Tommy Hilfiger.
Yeah, 80s and 90s designer stuff is so hot right now, you know, especially Tommy. Anything Tommy Hilfiger will sell. And,
so if I still have my Hypercolor t-shirt that works?
I've sold the Dennis Rodman Hypercolor. So I had the best of both worlds. I had a sports and a Hypercolor. So that was cool. That one for $150.
Right.
So.
Wow, jeez.
Yeah, so that was awesome.
All right. What about my Yo! MTV Raps t-shirt? Is that worth anything?
Yeah, that is worth something. I just don't know the condition.
It's a little
I think you said it was a little
worn.
Torn or something.
It's worn, Greg. Yeah. It's warm. All right, well, what else you got?
And for Steve, I brought in the I Went Nuts in New York plush peanut, which... It might not look like anything great, but the tag, it's from Toys R Us at Times Square, and these sell for over $100.
What?
Yeah, and I got this for a dollar.
It is super soft.
Dave, we're in the
right business. It is, and it's got the beanbag on the bottom.
I told Steve Cochran, I sent him a picture of it, and I said, look what you're missing.
I'm sure you'd rather
peanuts.
Be, right?
You're missing plush peanuts this morning. 312-981-7200. All right, let's try to get to some of these calls. We'll start it up and get to it. Let us start with... let's start with Christina. Christina's in Naperville. Christina, what do you want to brag about, Christina?
Okay, I have three promotional headshot cards from the early 1970s from the Detroit Auto Show.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
They are Byron Nelson, Jesse Owens, and Al Kaline with original signatures on them.
Oh, wow. So you got sports and the car show going there.
So it's a Detroit Auto Show. You're not fooling around.
You betcha.
You're not fooling around.
That's why the original.
That's why Al Kaline was there.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so you would have to, you know, obviously look up those signatures of those celebrities, and then, but the Detroit car show alone from 1970 or earlier would be probably in the $15 to $30 range just for the card or, you know, but she has headset shots signed from that, so I'm thinking
more.
50, you know, auction start, and it might go up from there.
Thanks, Christina. That's a good one.
Cool, thanks.
Thank you.
I like that. I like the idea of auto, because that stuff, we've done this before, the swap meet for years now here on WGN. Mm-hmm. That stuff plays, the auto show stuff.
Yeah, car guys, they're, you know, everyone's nuts about that, and But and the car shows, earlier car shows do well. Anything post 75, 80 doesn't do as well.
All right, let's go to Bob. Bob, what do you want to brag about, Bob?
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning. I have two photographs of Louis Armstrong and his band, one with instruments at the Blue Note on Madison.
Yes.
Wow. All autographed. It's with Cozy Cole, Melba, Earl Father
Hines. Where did you get that?
Whole band.
Where'd you get it?
I got it. My uncle started the original record shop before we had box stores, and he had that, and he got it. And I have it now, it's quite the thing, and I have no idea what it might be worth.
I would assume Louis Armstrong autographed photos would be in short supply. That's just my thought.
Yeah, and his stuff in general does really well. I mean, I'm saying some items upwards of $3,000 and $4,000 for photos or concert posters, you know, that from jazz festivals and so forth. That item, obviously, I'm not going to be able to find it, yeah. So I have to kind of go off of past signed items or whatever. But I'm thinking you're probably in the $300 to $400 range to start, and hopefully
that's
an auction will take it higher.
That's a winner, right?
That's
got to be the winner so far.
So far, yeah.
We got other people on the line here, 312-981-7200, who are going to try to beat that winner, right?
You know what? I want to start a segment where we do swap meet follow-up. These people that have found out did they sell it and what did it go for?
We started the original idea of the swap meet, which was really fun, but we're like, it's not going to work, is that you would call in and you would have, say, Louis Armstrong. I have the Louis Armstrong autograph. What will you give me?
Okay.
And then they say, I've got the Tommy Hilfiger jean jacket, and we'd swap, and then we realized, well, that's a lot of work on our end.
A lot of work.
That's too much work.
Yeah, so 312-981-7200. We'll do more of the swap meet coming up after the break. Doing the swap meet, 720 WGN. Greg Flam is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. All right, you ready for this? 574 says you have a cap from a Kevin Matthews golf outing signed by Kevin Matthews, Steve Cochran, Kevin Butler, Otis Wilson, Seika, and Johnny Red Kerr. That's a crew. Right?
Seika, that's awesome.
That's a crew. What is a Steve Cochran autograph going for these days?
That's interesting. I'd like to find that out.
I would think.
I'm going to say $1,000.
$1,000. There you go.
Wait a minute. $1,000?
I like this gig.
Sitting on a gold mine here, Greg.
Every day, every time, when the rundown's done, you have
to sign everything.
Right. All right, let's keep going. Let's bring in Emily. Emily's in Crystal Lake. Emily, what do you want to brag about?
I have a set of commemorative plates. They were distributed by the York Bank in Elmhurst, and there are six of them, and they have historical building depictions. My husband got them from his great aunt. They're in great condition. I don't know if they have any value whatsoever.
I just like bank plates. I feel like banks have forgotten the bank plate opportunities. You know, now they're just all about giving you cash rewards and stuff like that. Get back to the bank plates.
Right. I was hoping they were the printing plates, like really old.
Oh, to make
printing.
Money.
Those go for, $4,000. So I was hoping you had that.
Oh, yeah, no.
But,
nothing like that.
I'm not able to find that, just a bank plate in general, which means they're not really in high demand. So it's more, just a sentimental.
What do you mean bank plates aren't in high demand? I'll take them off your hands.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay, I'll be not saying to you then.
No, thanks.
Thanks, Emily. All right, let's go to Joe. Joe is in Richmond. Joe, love Richmond.
Yeah.
What do you want to brag about?
Yeah, I got all three original Animal Stories albums from Larry Lujack. I bought them brand new in Musicland back in the 80s, and they're all mint, but I hardly played them.
Okay, so they are open.
I'm not sure if they're worth that much. They are open, but they're in really good condition.
No, that's great. And the fact that you have all three, if you were to sell them, would get you more money by having all three. I've sold them individually before, and they're in the...
Oh, yeah, okay.
They're like $15 to $20 each, so you might get a little bit more.
There you go. Would a top 40 listing with Brant Miller with a mullet?
Yeah.
And I've sold those as well.
Inside the jacket, go help it out?
Yeah, I've sold lots of those WLS surveys, and they'll go for like... $40 for a lot of like 23 or 24.
I could see the NBC Tower over here. I'll go over and get Brant Miller to sign it with the mullet.
My first job in radio was with Kevin Matthews, and he had taken on the Animal Stories, Jim Short's Animal Stories, that type of thing. And when he got taken off the air, I still was kept on. And one of my jobs was to cut the DAT tapes of every Animal Stories we ever did on that station.
Wow.
So for hours on end, I would have to listen in real time to animal stories over and over and over and over and over.
I can tell by your story that you may not like animal stories.
So I'm no longer a fan of animal stories.
Time you'll never get back.
No.
Let's bring in Clay. Clay's in Buffalo Grove. Clay, what do you want to brag about?
I've got a Christmas card from Peter, Paul, and Mary sent out in 1963.
That's awesome.
It's a 45 record of a solo in one side Monaro, the other side stereo.
Wow.
Why are you on, why are you on their Christmas card list?
I was trying to hire them. I was the head of a committee at SIU in 1963.
There you go.
To bring them there for a concert. And I had all three of them sign it at a different concert.
That's great, though.
That's great.
It's obviously very rare. I don't think I'll ever find another one like that. So I'm thinking you're probably in the $200 to $300 range
there
to start because Peter, Paul, and Mary just reel-to-reel tapes are going for like $150 these days. So,
Clay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, there you go. Great swap meet today.
Yeah,
we're going to wrap it up here. Barbara, Jamie, Tom, and the rest of the people are on the line in the text as well. We're not going to get to you this week. Call in next week. Chichi Rodriguez autographed T-shirt. Billie Holiday album from 1978. Mm. A lot of good stuff that's coming in, including I love when we get into the local radio stuff, you know, because we one of the best ones was the Steve Dahl, Gary Meyer, New Year's Eve VHS tape. That's
right.
Yeah. That was a lot of good stuff. You can find Greg every weekend at Palatine at Wolf's Flea Market, as well at DuPage Picker, both at Facebook. He's got a Facebook page and on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, here every Thursday on the Steve Cochran Show. Greg, always a pleasure.
Good always to see fun. You, thanks.
All right. Coming up, we have got Phil Rosenthal, the law creator of Everybody Loves Raymond. And, of course, his new Netflix show. I shouldn't say new. It's been on for a while, but it's a second course, as he's calling it. Someone Feed Phil. We'll talk with Phil Rosenthal, and also Jim DeRogatis will join us coming up later in the 9 o'clock hour. So still a lot to get to as we join CLTV here on the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Song in the history of travel food shows?
I'd say ever written.
Ever written. Just, I mean, Reba McEntire,
by the way,
we're just talking about, that's a good theme song, but this theme song
this is better.
This one's better.
Because it's mine.
That's
no,
right.
It's also, did you know, Emmy nominated.
Is it really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just the theme song?
Just the theme song.
Oh, that's amazing.
Nobody likes anything else about the show but that.
And that's one of those things where you can now say it's part of an Emmy-nominated thing,
yeah, right,
and then
exactly
people don't
right
even
Emmy-nominated
care what the detail was.
No.
Now you've got an Emmy, possibly, for
you got it.
Somebody
right
Feed Phil.
I'll take it.
In studio with us, the creator of Somebody Feed Phil, Phil Rosenthal, longtime television, I would say, legend, and the creator of Everybody Loves
that's
Raymond.
That's when you get old enough, that's they call you that.
He has moved in his new part of his career. He gets in front of the camera, and he has dedicated his life to food and travel. The show Somebody Feed Phil in its second course. He also was, of course, the I'll Have What Phil's Having on PBS before that. Phil Rosenthal in studio with us today. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
I love being here. What a view. I wish your listeners could see the view I see.
It's pretty amazing. And we are broadcast on CLTV this hour, so they're watching on TV as well. So
TV?
They,
where's the camera?
They're all over the
they're
place.
They're hidden.
What do you mean?
They're in Dave Bennett's eyes.
I would have worn clothing.
That's true.
Holy cow.
So the second course is out, and you know, this is you've got Dublin, you've got Italy, you've got New York City.
Talk Which about, one did you like?
I like Dublin, I like New York, I like them all. But but talk about the process of choosing which cities you're going to go explore on the show.
Well, I have a mission, right? I'm trying to get Americans especially to travel. Two-thirds of Americans don't even have a passport. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. And that includes everyone who came to America with a passport. And only 10%, it turns out, of those people use their passport. So you think American tourists are everywhere, but they're not. There's so many more people. I think, you know, we wouldn't be in the shape we're in today if more people could experience a little bit of someone else's experience, right?
Right.
So it's all about, the show's all about connecting people it's disguised as a food and travel
but
show.
You're absolutely right, because there'll be food shows that the people who are hosting it maybe come from the kitchen or possibly from a travel experience.
Sure.
In this show, one of the great things about it is you seem to be experiencing these things for the first time.
A lot of the times I'm no expert. You know, we owe a lot to Mr. Bourdain. Anyone who travels or eats, I think, right, owes him a debt, and especially me, because my show is merely a take on his type of show. In fact, the way I sold my show was to say, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain if he was afraid of everything.
So you mentioned Bourdain. I know the production company you work with is ZPZ Productions.
Yeah.
They
you know
did
that?
All his, well, yeah, I, because of social media, you know,
yes,
things more about,
yeah, right,
stuff
right,
than you used to know. And
scenes.
So I've been following them because their camera work, Bourdain is a show we watched at home a lot. And
me too.
It's, they're so talented.
Yeah.
And we talk about, my husband and I, the what it must go into scouting those locations,
yes,
and getting those shots. And so I want to know how you, I know you had some TV cred, but how do you go in not being a chef, not
right,
being a host really, other than your background of wanting to be an actor early on, and you get ZPZ behind a show for you,
yeah,
when they work with the best?
Well, when I pitched the show originally to PBS, and they said, okay, they gave me 6 episodes, they said, what production company do you want to use? And the first thing I said was, who does Bourdain use?
There,
right,
you go.
Why not,
yeah,
start,
why not
there,
start with,
right,
the best?
With the,
okay,
best. And so they have access to the world's best cameramen, and they have, you know, boots on the ground, fixers,
okay,
in every location on the earth because of Bourdain's like 18-year experience.
Right.
So I'm taking advantage. So you asked me originally, how do I pick these places? So if I'm trying to get you to travel, Americans who may be reticent to travel, maybe they're afraid, maybe they don't know where to go, I start with Earth's greatest hits.
Sure.
Okay? So the first episodes were Barcelona,
right, right,
and Paris and Italy, right? So these are accessible places to Americans. These are places where a lot of people are going to speak English. You don't have to be afraid. I'm still in that zone, 18 shows in. I'm still in the most people speak English territories. I haven't even covered them all yet.
Right.
People, a lot of people speak English all over the world. You know, you don't have to be afraid, people. And then, you know, it's not like you're going to have to sleep in a hut in a jungle. You have a bed with a pillow in a hotel, and there'll be food
working
that
plumbing.
You recognize.
But that's,
yes,
the tremendous part
plumbing
about the show, especially when you talk about some of the Asian cities that you've,
yes,
from Bangkok to other places, that you are almost in a way debunking or going against the American stereotype of what these places are like.
Absolutely. You can go to Bangkok and have a completely comfortable experience. By comfortable, I mean things you're used to, and still have an exotic, out of world, your world experience. For instance, you get to Bangkok. The first thing we do is we get to the floating market.
Right.
And you're sitting in a little boat with a guy with a tiny motor. He's piloting the boat. And you just putt, putt, putt up this river. And you go to one side of the river, and there's a lady in a boat with a stove on the boat with a wok. And she's making pad thai noodles. And she gives you these pad thai noodles. And they're not just good for being on a boat in a river. These are the best pad thai you ever had. Then you putt, putt, putt over to the other side of the river, and there's a lady with meat on a skewer. That is mind-blowing. Disney's got nothing on this ride, is what I'm telling you. You go on the It's a Small World ride, they're not feeding you.
Right.
This is like life-changing stuff. This is why you travel. To have these experiences. And then you go back to your nice hotel. It's unbelievable.
Well,
please
show,
go.
The second course of Somebody Feed Phil is out now on Netflix, a documentary food travel series hosted by Phil Rosenthal, the longtime television creator. He created Everybody Loves Raymond. And now, of course, the host of Somebody Feed Phil. He also said, I'll have what Phil's having on PBS. Let's
They're
do
all
this.
Available
They're
on Netflix.
All available
shows
on Netflix. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back more with Phil here on the Cochrane Show on 720 WGN. WGN and on CLTV. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. Cochran back on Tuesday. Everybody's here. Mary Sandberg, Dave Ennett, Steve Grzanich, Mary Vanderbilt, and Phil Rosenthal, the creator of Somebody Feed Phil, the second course, which is out now, food travel series, which is on Netflix as well. You can find on Netflix I'll Have What Phil's Having, which was a show from PBS. and, of course, Phil, the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond, as we just heard the theme song. How does that experience of being a showrunner and a creator for such a successful sitcom, how does that help you with the new stuff? Because they're entirely different, but how does it help you?
You know, making a show is a lot like making a show. So once you learn that, this show now is like I'm combining everything I did learn about making a show. If you watch, the show is a little bit part sitcom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've got, I don't want to talk about myself in the third person, but you have a character who you're putting in certain situations. Some of them are out of my comfort zone, which I do on purpose because I'm trying to get you out of your comfort zone.
Right.
Your comfort zone may be just to get off the couch and go travel or even travel in your own town. By the way, that's why we do one American city every six, is because I want to show people, yes, I understand not everyone can afford to travel overseas, but you can travel in Chicago. There's an ethnic restaurant that you're afraid to go to because you didn't look at the menu. You don't know what's on there. But we all have the phone. Look at the phone. Look at that. That's Peruvian. I don't know anything about that. Okay, so look. Oh, they have chicken and rice. Yes, they have. I like that. Yes, you like that. Go. And before you know it, you're trying something else on the menu. And maybe you talk to the owner and he's Peruvian. And before you know it, you're in Machu Picchu. It starts with baby steps, right? I'm baby steps guy.
Well, what's great about the show as well is the Skyping of your parents. It does
sitcom-like.
It's very sitcom-like. They become characters on the show.
By the way, it's no secret. Those parents were kind of the basis for the parents in Raymond. Those very parents. And so I try to use them every episode because I'm no dummy. They are funny.
Oh, yeah. Monica's a riot.
You want funny in the show. And so I'm taking everything I learned about how to make a show. And certainly I'm learning new things about, and I let the ZPZ professional show me how to make this kind of show. But it's all storytelling, right? And I'm combining this knowledge of storytelling with everything else I love in life. Food, travel, family, friends, laughs. It's the pinnacle, this show, of my stupid existence on the earth.
About your stupid existence, I've read how you documented that you didn't grow up in a household of great cooking.
No.
That your mom cooked everything like a shoe, basically.
We had a setting on the oven for shoe.
And so did you have to force yourself to be interested in trying new things?
No.
Or did you naturally...
You know, when I had food with any flavor outside the house, like I had garlic at a restaurant when I went to college. I never had it before. My top of my head came off. What is this? This is delicious, right? It was like, you know, in The Wizard of Oz when she opens the door and suddenly everything's in color. That was like that with me and garlic.
How did you, do you have to think about, you know, as this a journey, an educational journey, and how much of it is learning new things and pushing yourself to learn new things, and how much of it is just entertainment?
It's all entertainment. It has to be entertainment, first of all, or you're not going to watch it. So I understand, you know, we shoot 10 days in each location, and we cut it down to an hour. That hour that you're seeing has to be, first and foremost, entertaining. Otherwise, why show it to you? Right?
Right?
People say, well, it looks like you like everything. Yes, I like everything that I'm showing you.
Yeah.
Why
right.
would I show you the stuff I feel like, about? Right?
Right.
Does that happen a lot? I mean, you go to places and you try something, you're
That's
like, this
life.
Is no good.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Most things in life, people, are terrible. So when you find the great stuff, that's what you celebrate. Right? That's what. Why have a TV show and show you the man? This stuff isn't so good.
Right.
Dave was just in Norway and he brought us back some whale jerky.
Whale. Let's see, Phil. We had elk.
Yeah.
We had whale and reindeer.
How was the whale?
It kind of tasted like the elk and the reindeer, really, because it was smoked.
Once you
bring it jerky,
it
could have people jerky, and it kind of tastes the same.
It would probably be the same.
By the way, that's my new business.
People jerky.
People jerky, I like
that's
it.
That's smart. You put your name all over that.
Yeah.
What's next for you? I mean, you've got 18 episodes already kind of figured out.
Yeah.
What cities are you thinking about for the next year?
Only
the
rest of the world.
Only the rest of the world.
There's so much. I mean, if we're lucky enough to continue, and I think everyone listening should write in and say, let's go, people.
The old write-in campaign.
Well, my parents are very old. TikTok, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's get them on the show.
Try to get in production, right?
Yeah. But I've said this. I'm not just saying this because I'm here, but Chicago is the very next American city that I want to do. because this is an incredible food.
And to do that, and you talked about the fixers, right?
Yeah.
Do you lean on people who are Chicagoans to say this is where you need to go? Is
I'd
that
be stupid not to.
Right. Are you lobbying?
Yeah, I would love
you
to.
You want to be a fixer?
I am a two-time James Beard Award winner, so.
Is that true?
That is true, yeah.
Me too. I'm a James Beard
See, there winner. We go. See, hey, if you need brothers. Fixing, let me know, right?
You've even got the beard. I grew a beard just for today.
For today. I appreciate it.
For James Beard. But what did you win for?
I won for editing local documentaries for radio.
And he's since been banned. And I've for since, his acceptance speech.
I,
so.
What did you do? And this goes back about 20 years. I made a joke. It was a good joke, but
this is going to get us in trouble.
No. Okay. The premise, I'll do it real quick, was Charlie Trotter was a couple before me, and he got best book that year.
Yeah.
And he went up and he said, I don't deserve this.
Right.
I want to give it to someone else in the category. That bit, right? You know, but he actually does it. He doesn't just say, oh, I don't deserve it. Thank you. He does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He walks off the stage and hands it. So when I got up there, which I'm secondary on, Steve Dolinsky won the award. I'm just the editor on it.
I understand.
And they go, okay, you want to say something real quick? And I'm like, I too would like to give my award away, and I'd like to give it to Al's Fun in the Bun, the restaurant of Montrose and Walcott in Ravenswood, because with a name like Al's Fun in the Bun, it deserves a James Beard, right?
Great.
And crickets. Well, like, get off the stage.
Wow.
You are not a name brand. You don't get to make, you don't need to do bits and make fun of Charlie Trotter at the
same
time.
Editing.
Get out!
Wow.
So yeah, so that was the end of my James Beard career.
Sorry.
I should have used you as a joke writer. That might have been better.
Yeah.
Phil Rosenthal, so your Chicago is on deck as the next American city.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much of the world we haven't touched yet. I've only done 18, and the world is very, very big, in case you didn't notice. So, like, I haven't done London yet, I haven't done Marrakesh, Istanbul, Australia, I haven't even been to Australia. There's many places in the Far East we haven't gone. It's a big world out there. Somebody's got to eat it.
There you go. Phil Rosenthal, the man behind Somebody Feed Phil, the second course, the documentary food travel series is on Netflix. He's also, of course, the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond. And you can find all of, even the old episodes of I'll Have What Phil's Having from PBS on Netflix. And Phil, it's a pleasure to have you in studio. Thanks for being here.
I love it.
All right. So coming up, Jim DeRogatis is going to join us, talk about being name-checked in the new R. Kelly track that was just dropped. And before we do that, we'll take a break. Walter's perspective can be found online, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. But we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the headlines. And then Jim DeRogatis, stay with us.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
720 WGN, Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. Steve will be back on Tuesday, but Sandberg's here, and Dave Ennett's here, and Chris Hanich is here, of course, and Mary Vandeveld. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow, Sir the Baptist, great hip-hop gospel performer, is bringing in a whole crew to perform live in our new performance studio. We're talking this choir robes and stuff like that.
Oh, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, right?
So excited about that.
It's going to be great, and it's going to be for us, for at least us. I've seen that the new performance studio has been used by Roe and others, but this will be our first time using it.
And also we have two good-looking guys, Troy Murray and Chris Chelios.
That's right.
Joining
Chris Chelios joins us, but also Troy Murray is going to be our co-host for the entire show.
How starting at that? 7 a.m., yeah.
I thought they were singing gospel.
Yeah, no.
Oh, why not, right?
That'd be hilarious.
Let's get Murray in there. That's great. Anyway, coming up 10 o'clock, Bill and Wendy. But before we get there, Jim DeRogatis is joining us. You know, it's very interesting. I think that this will be the first time that we will have a guest on the Cochran Show that has actually been name-checked in an R. Kelly song. He dropped that song, I Admit, on Monday, I think it was, and he actually references Jim. Take a listen.
To Jim C. Rigatis, or whatever your name is.
Whatever your name.
You've been trying to destroy me for 25 whole years.
25 whole years.
Writing the same stories over and over and over again. Off my name, you done went and made yourself a career. Guess what? I pray for you and your family and all my other enemies. I'm not gonna let y'all steal my joy. I'm just gonna keep on doing me. Now I don't know what else to say except I'm so falsely accused.
Tell me,
how can you judge when you never walk in my shoes?
So R. Kelly puts out a 19-minute song called I Admit. This is, we're listening to a little snippet. This was a big story that he was coming clean on some of the allegations that are way beyond the Me Too movement. We're talking about sexual misconduct. We're talking about cult behavior. Talking about sex slavery. these stories that have abound. And Jim DeRogatis, a great reporter in Chicago, is a longtime Sun-Times reporter, and the co-host of Sound Opinions, has been the reporter who has really followed this story when many people have dropped it.
Somehow it went under the radar there after like a while. I don't know why. And he was on it and kept it in the forefront. And it's disturbing.
Yeah.
A lot of this is really disturbing.
It really is. And it's a story that, unfortunately, you know, we've seen a lot in Chicago. And you know, there was a trial, which I think was a trial for child pornography.
Yeah.
Because it was about all around his sex tape. This was now 15, 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this would have been early 2000s this happened.
That's when it Maybe happened, 2000, yeah.
Yeah. And, the
I want to say the trial was like 2010 or 11. I know we Pete and I were on the doll show at the time because we had someone covering
it. And he was acquitted, not found innocent, but acquitted because they couldn't necessarily pick him out on the video. That was the thing, and that was a big part of it. But since that time, we've had more and more stories and women come forward about R. Kelly and relationships with him, or being held by against their will
and their age,
and the and being underage. And it's continued. And Jim DeRogatis has done a pretty tremendous job of continuing to cover that story. And this is the story. R. Kelly has put out a 19-minute song that it's called I Admit, but a lot of pushback as well, saying he didn't admit anything. If you listen to the song, he will do exactly what he did with Jim DeRogatis, where he talks about Jim and then makes excuses. They're the haters, the enemies. He did the same throughout. I made mistakes, but now you know what? It's really because my all the haters.
All the haters is their problem.
So he didn't really do what he was supposed to do. On the line with us now, Jim DeRogatis. Jim, how's it feel?
Hello, Justin.
How you doing, bud? How's it feel to be name-checked in an R. Kelly song? All right, so they're working on it. There's a problem with the phone lines, but
yeah, I think people might have just heard Joe, Super Joe, telling you that in your ears.
Oh yeah, you can hear it. You can hear it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we're working it out. We'll figure it out. But and Jim, who's been a longtime guest with me here at WGN. Full disclosure, I worked with Jim as editor for him at WBEZ. I'd actually pitched Jim to talk on the program about Lollapalooza, which is coming up in a week. He's got a tremendous history of reporting on Lollapalooza issues, whether it be their security plan, what they do during weather, but also their financial interest and the sweetheart deals they have gotten with the city to be take over Grant Park, a free public park, for a weekend. There was and because of his reporting, there was a pushback saying that the company that owned Lollapalooza, C3, they ended up giving money, the money they were supposed to be, because they were essentially getting a tax break, all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
Anyway, Jim's back. Let's get him on the line. Jim, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Justin. How are you?
Good. So let's start with R. Kelly, because like I said, I had reached out to you about talking about other issues, Lollapalooza coming up, and of course the Lincoln Yards Project and what effect that might have on local music.
There's a lot going on.
But R. Kelly, why don't we start there?
We had a lot going on, but Kelly dropped this track. Listen, you know, big deal. He mentions me in the song. What he doesn't mention is the names of the women I've reported on the record as being in jeopardy, being physically and mentally abused, allegedly, right now in a recording studio on Justine Street, that Sheriff Tom Dart's sex trafficking unit has made all of one well-being check on. There have been 7 police reports filed in numerous states, Florida, Georgia, Chicago. Olympia Fields police haven't acted. Chicago police have not acted. And there are young women. Joy Savage is now 21. She's been with Kelly since 19. Azrael Clary is now 19. She's been with Kelly since age 17. Dominique Gardner started with him as a 17-year-old 9 years ago. These parents have been on the record, the Clarys, the Savages, Michelle Kramer, Dominique's mother, saying their daughters are being physically and mentally abused, being brainwashed, are part of a cult. The FBI has done dozens of hours of interviews, and no one has acted in law enforcement. And, you know, we've seen giants like Harvey Weinstein and Bill O'Reilly and Kevin Spacey fall overnight in this hashtag Me Too movement. These are women in trouble right now, if we're to believe all of these sources. And I have 14 or 15 of them who put their names on these stories, and no one's helping them.
Yeah. The R. Kelly in the song does call out, he, at one point, talking about, you know, parents are dropping off their kids to him. That's really on them, not necessarily on him. Most of might even think that we're having that conversation, but he says that it's, there's more than meets the eye, that it's a lot of time parents are offering up, in his case, he said, over age, but their kids to him to be part of the tour, to be a part of
his life. That's nonsense, Justin. I've seen travel arrangements, canceled checks, lawsuits, legal documents. I have a mountain of them. And these parents are saying, we thought he would make my daughter, who was a singer, a star, as he did with Aaliyah, who he married illegally in 1996 at the Rosemont Gateway Suites, with Reverend Nathan Edmond presiding, in a falsified marriage certificate filed with Cook County. All right? And he wrote, at that point, Aaliyah's debut album, which was titled Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. So this has been in full view of the world since 1994. Aaliyah wasn't even the first girl.
Jim,
we
talked about this before. I mean, because of Spotify and others, the music industry, there has been a backlash more than we've seen with R. Kelly in the last couple of years, where it seems like these stories are catching up to him in this new movement, where people are not taking that sort of hipster approach saying, I love the music anyway, but they are taking a stand saying, enough of R.
Kelly. It depends how you define backlash. RCA Sony Music has not commented on him, and as far as we know, he is still signed to the largest label in the world. Ticketmaster Live Nation have not commented on him, and as far as we know, they will continue to promote his shows. So, Justin, he's claiming he's broke, and you know, I'm not surprised, and I admit it, because he's been paying young women off since 1994 with non-disclosure agreements, the patented Harvey Weinstein tool, you know, to get them to not speak out in public. And now people are breaking those NDAs and very bravely saying, this has to be stopped, and yet no one is taking action. I mean, even just the 3 or 4 million downloads, he's not getting paid for them. He put it on SoundCloud, this I admit. But people are listening. People are still dismissing the young black women, and a lot of them, Justin, the vast overwhelming majority are in Chicago. Kim Fox is aware of this situation. Several of the people I've interviewed have spoken to her, the state's attorney. There's no action there. There's a black eye that Dick Devine got when he, indicted R. Kelly in 2002 on 21 counts of making child porn. And horrifyingly, that girl who he met at age 12 or 13 is still part of this alleged cult. I have a dozen sources telling me. There's no law enforcement action. It cost millions for the state to try him, and they lost. You know, they shouldn't have. You know, by the way, that was on Father's Day weekend. And I just heard from an alternate juror yesterday who said the jury was eager to go home. It had been a 5-week trial in Judge Vincent Gaughan's courtroom. He's about to hear the Jason Van Dyke, Laquan McDonald shooting trial. A man who tramples over the reporter's privilege, the First Amendment, hearing star chamber hearings. He was just upbraided by the Illinois Appellate Court for the amount of stuff that happens in his courtroom that is not public record.
Jim,
it's frightening.
Do you think that it has to do with a little bit of a cultural issue? You named Kevin Spacey, Weinstein, Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, Bill O'Reilly. These are all white men who were taken down pretty quickly once it became, you know, a thing to do. But R. Kelly comes from a different background, and he's hanging with girls from a different background. You know that.
How much is it cultural?
I've said it a dozen times, and I'm merely echoing dozens of young black women who've said it to me. And what they say is, nobody matters less in our society than young black women. If it had been one white girl from Winnetka, this would have been a different story. But there is a very vocal movement. There has been for years, Justin. I remember seeing young college students at the University of Texas protesting him in 2006. You know, there's been young black women protesting for years, but what Tarana Burke, the founder of hashtag MeToo, and Ava DuVernay and Chandra Rhimes have said is that it's strictly because they're black victims. You know, Time's Up put out a very powerful statement in March demanding law enforcement action and the industry enablers, and they named them Ticketmaster, Live Nation, RCA, Sony, for not taking action. And right now, WGCI still has Kelly in heavy rotation.
Jim DeRogatis with us. Jim, of course, a longtime music reporter here in Chicago. Before I let you go, Lollapalooza coming up here in a week's time. I know you have done tremendous work to keep them on the record and to keep them in the public when it comes to their financial interests and taking over Grant Park down in downtown Chicago every year. What this year, I mean, are you, first of all, are you going to go? And second, do you see this, is it still good for the city of Chicago to have Lollapalooza downtown?
It's the worst thing that's ever happened in the Chicago music community. Lollapalooza is owned by promoters from Texas, C3 Presents, William Morris Endeavor, which is run by the mayor's brother, Ari Emanuel, and Live Nation Ticketmaster. It is an unholy trio that we could compare to the Justice League of America's nemesis, the Legion of Doom. And they are about to open, no, it's not funny, they're about to open five venues as part of this alleged Linkin Park development. Why is this bad? I mean, you know, on the one level, it's just big corporate America, you know, Walmart or Microsoft. But on another, Justin, you know, you edited many pieces I wrote about these radius clauses. If you take the money from the Legion of Doom, you are not allowed to play elsewhere in the Chicago area for 9 months, 6 months before and 3 months after Lollapalooza. And they define the Chicago area as far as Minneapolis, yeah, right, and Detroit. Right. You know, we are hurtling toward a Chicago musical cultural scene that it will be controlled by one corporate entity, Live Nation, Lollapalooza, and C3 Presents, Ari Emanuel, right? You know, I mean, the mayor's brother is going to get a big piece of the money made next week. And nobody, why the Tribune and Crane's Chicago and nobody else doesn't hammer away at that? You know, I don't know, there's a lot to hammer away at Rahm Emanuel for, but that's a really significant issue. And it's significant because it's driving out, you know, you come from the underground comedy world and the underground theater world. And that's what makes Chicago the best city in America to live. Well, those are going to be extinct because we have this giant corporate nemesis that doesn't play nice with existing culture. You know, so when people have a good time next week in Grant Park, enjoy yourselves, but think about, is this the only company I would like to control my cultural musical future?
Yep. Jim DeRogatis, always great talking to you. Thanks for joining us. Jim DeRogatis, you can find all his stuff online, of course, and he's a co-host of Sound Opinions, a national talk show dedicated to music. Thanks, Jim.
You betcha, Justin.
I love talking to Jim. All right, we're way late, but that's on me. Let Jim talk. So,
this is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, that's going to do it. We're back tomorrow. Bill and Wendy up next. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good morning.
Can I say this about you had Phil Rosenthal in.
Yeah, right.
The softest hands of any human being I've ever shaken hands with.
Wants that revealed.
That makes him a better person because he's so talented, but then you shake his hand, you go, this is going to be like a lumberjack, but no, it's just really soft.
What about his career made you think his hands would be rough?
He wrote a TV show
and he eats food.
He's not construction.
I would have assumed well manicured hands is probably what I had pictured.
You're watching Raymond and you're like, oh, that's rough.
But think he moisturizes?
He moisturizes. Okay. But you know how when, as you're going in for the handshake with a guy, you go, there's going to be a grip. Yeah. He's got the grip, but his skin is so soft.
I don't pre-think it. I just shake someone's hand and what happens, happens. Oh, I wonder how his hand is going to feel.
Wendy, I'm going to find Phil Rosenthal and bring him back so you can shake his hands and then you'll say what you guys are right.
What usually happens, Wendy?
I don't think about it. I shake a hand and I move on.
Well, Bill scared him anyway because he said, hey, I've eaten with you.
We've had lunch together.
At Hot Dogs. Yeah. And he was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, he didn't remember?
He remembered, but he was a little.
He didn't expect to see me.
Yes. Yeah. That's what it is.
He's been waiting his whole career for the reunion.
Right. He's been looking over his shoulder, is what he's been doing.
And all that time, he's like, I got to keep my hands soft because who knows when I'll see him again.
How are his feet?
Not as soft. I thought those will also be soft, and then I'm giving him a foot massage, and I'm like, why aren't his feet as soft as his hands are? Doesn't make sense. What, his back got, was soft, but his, soft? Yeah, but his feet were not soft.
There you go.
Very How strange. Badly do you want to be in TV? I mean, come on. Leave the guy alone.
What do you guys got on the show today?
Dean Richards. Yeah. We're going to talk movies.
Soft hands. Dean Richards.
Savoir Faire is everywhere.
Dennis Savard will be in.
Oh, nice.
The convention, of course, kicks off. Mm-hmm. That's tomorrow already. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's Thursday. Mm-hmm. Holy soft hands.
All right, take it away.